for his kids. A pile of work in his briefcase still demanded his attention. When he got off the interstate at his exit, Roger felt a surge of emotion that he couldn't fully understand. As he passed a local park 5 blocks from his house, the feelings inside him became so overwhelming that he couldn't continue driving. To his astonishment, the moment he pulled his car over, tears began to stream down his face. The last time he remembered crying was at his wedding 12 years earlier, and those had been tears of joy. These tears, he realized, were a reflection of some deep sadness about his life, and he had been holding them in for a long time. It occurred to Roger that what he really wanted was to go home and to hug his wife and his children and to tell them how much he loved them and missed them. Roger drove the last several blocks home, feeling lighter and more buoyant. As he opened the front door, he called out to his children and his wife, but no one answered. He looked in the kitchen and in the playroom to no avail. Rachel had long ago taught the children to give their father a wide berth on the nights that he arrived home late, knowing he would likely be feeling exhausted and irritable. On this occasion, however, Roger bounded up the stairs and found his girls playing together in Alyssa's room. The moment he saw them, he knelt down, held out his arms, and they came running to him. He scooped them up, and the tears began to stream down his face again. Moments later, Rachel walked in. She stopped in the doorway, and a horrified look crossed her face. "Oh, my God," she said, "don't tell me. You've been fired." Roger smiled through his tears. "No," he said, "it isn't that. I'm just so happy to see everyone." The next morning, Roger woke up feeling better than he had in years. He had breakfast with Rachel before the children got up. His morning at work was intense, but he forced himself to stick with his plan to exercise during his lunch hour at the health club near his office. It was the first time he had used the membership since a week after Rachel gave it to him for Christmas 8 months earlier. When he finished the workout, Roger was physically tired but emotionally exhilarated. Instead of opting for a hamburger and fries at a fast food restaurant near his office, he stopped at a local gourmet deli and made himself a light lunch from a salad bar. During the afternoon, he was less fatigued than he could remember feeling in a long time. At 6:30 sharp, he left for home. As Roger approached the park near his house, he felt the same surge of emotion that he had had the previous evening. And for a second time, he was compelled to pull over. To his utter amazement, his eyes again filled with tears, and the same intense desire to be with his family arose. This time, when he walked into his house, he found his 2 daughters in the playroom. He held out his arms as they came running to him, and once again, he began to weep. "Mommy," Alyssa yelled, "Daddy's crying again!"
During the next 6 months, Roger was able to count on one hand the number of times that he returned home from work and failed to stop his car for at least a few minutes at the park near his house. The tears subsided, but the predictable surge of emotion did not. Stopping at the park became a ritual that permitted Roger to make a profound transition. Each time he parked his car, he left his work behind him and took time to reconnect with why his family mattered so much to him and who he wanted to be when he was with them. For years, returning home at the end of the workday had felt like stepping from one set of exhausting demands into another. Now he began to experience his family as a powerful source of renewal. He became impeccable about his commitment to leave work by 6:30 p.m. and to do his workouts. 3 weeks after returning home, Roger instituted a second ritual around his children. Because he left each morning before they awoke, he decided to write each of them a note each day and to slip it under their doors. It was a way to connect with his daughters, even though he didn't actually see them, and to affirm their importance in his life. It also became a source of pleasure on its own terms. Some days he wrote what he called Roger's Rules of Order, usually in the form of short fables that he made up. On Sunday nights he drew each of them a cartoon strip, something he had done for his college newspaper but never since. When he was traveling, he sent an email to both girls in the mornings. Roger realized how important these rituals had become to his daughters one morning when he was rushed and failed to push a note under their doors. When he returned home that evening, both girls were waiting for him at the door with their arms folded. "Daddy, you forgot something this morning," Alyssa said. Roger also instituted a morning ritual of eating breakfast with his wife, alternating oatmeal egg white omelets and a protein drink. Eating at home also gave him an opportunity to spend time with Rachel before the kids got up. The chance to connect for a few minutes of uninterrupted time each morning very quickly became precious to both of them. It was far more enriching than sitting in silence behind a morning newspaper. Instead, he spent 3 minutes skimming the headlines and saved a more careful reading for the evening after his kids were in bed. Within a couple of weeks, Roger felt a dramatic upturn in the quality and the quantity of his energy, both at home and at work. Over the next couple of months, Roger launched two other rituals. The first was devoting the final 15 minutes of his morning commute to thinking about the day ahead and revisiting his primary values. The second was making a call during his commute home to someone he cared about, his father and mother, one of his two siblings, or a friend. He could tell that his parents deeply appreciated hearing from him more often. The routine also became a great way to rekindle his connection with a good friend who had lived next door but had moved away the previous year. It turned out that the friend commuted home most nights at the same time that Roger did, and they began speaking for 15 or 20 minutes, cell phone to cell phone, at least once a week. Roger was also successful in sticking to his workout regimen. Within a month, he expanded it from 3 days to four, adding Sunday afternoons. Initially, he had planned just one workout on the weekends. He offered to take responsibility for the kids on the other day so that Rachel could have a couple of hours to work out herself. She was reluctant to be away from the children more than she already was during the week. Roger argued that she needed some time for herself and that working out would give her more positive energy when she was with the kids. Rachel finally suggested a compromise. It turned out that the local YMCA provided childcare for parents using the facility, and so they joined as a family. Roger and Rachel began working out together on Saturday afternoons, and they brought their kids along. On Sunday, at midday, Rachel went to work out by herself, while Roger took the girls out for brunch. These rituals around working out, eating better, and spending more focused time with his family were the primary ones that Roger undertook during the 2 months after he visited with us. While none of them related directly to his job, the changes he made not only influenced how he felt physically and his relationship with his family, but also affected his productivity at the office. Feeling more positive and more energized, Roger became less edgy at work and able to concentrate better, especially in the afternoons after his workouts. Because he was getting more done in less time, he felt comfortable about leaving work earlier. At least twice a week, he was out the door by 5:30 and home by 6:30, a full hour earlier than at any point since he started his job a decade earlier. 8 weeks after he left us, we got a call from Roger's boss. "I don't know how you did it, but the guy is reborn," he told us. "It's like he's 10 years younger and all fired up again." At 3 months, Roger began instituting several more rituals that were part of the second phase of his initial action plan. One was to better prioritize his work. Before coming to us, Roger had typically spent the first hour at the office answering emails and calls. Now, like many of our clients, he committed himself to a routine of putting off responding to email and voicemail each morning until he first addressed at least one important, longer-range challenge. His second ritual focused on being more rigorous about his breaks. While he had become meticulous about stopping at precisely 1 p.m. on the 2 days that he exercised, he still tended to work continuously for as much as 3 to 4 hours at a stretch. Roger decided to build in one recovery break in the morning and one in the afternoon. Browsing in bookstores was one of his favorite activities, and he began using his morning break to walk to the local Barnes & Noble, 3 blocks from his office, and spending 15 minutes there. In the afternoons, he used his breaks to check in with his girls as they returned home from school, and then to do 10 minutes of deep breathing at his desk. He also shifted his afternoon snack from a candy bar to half of an energy bar, or a piece of fruit, or a handful of nuts. The third ritual that Roger launched was to have lunch with one of his direct reports every week, an outgrowth both of having defined kindness and respect for others as a primary value, and a response to the feedback he'd received that he was critical and impatient. On the occasions that he felt it was important to give some kind of critical feedback, he made it a practice to begin and end by saying something positive. At 6 months, Roger returned to our facility for a follow-up. From the moment that he walked in the door, it was clear that he had changed in significant ways. He looked healthier, but also more animated, engaged, and upbeat. The physical changes were immediately measurable. Roger had lost 12 pounds. His body fat percentage had declined from 26 to 19%. His cholesterol levels had dropped from 245 to 185, and his blood pressure was now well within the normal range. When we tested him, his endurance had increased by almost 25% and his strength by 35%. We also asked Roger to rate his level of engagement. Where he had put it at 5 at work and a 3 at home just 6 months earlier, he now put it at a 9 for both. Not every aspect of Roger's life was transformed. He admitted that he continued to smoke, especially on difficult days. He still wasn't satisfied with his level of integrity and responsibility, following through in a timely way on his commitments. Too often, Roger told us, he continued to let sudden demands divert his attention from more important but less pressing priorities. When the demands mounted high enough, he still had a tendency to get impatient and curt with others. Roger told us that he was determined to create a ritual around behaving with more grace under pressure, using such situations not as an excuse for bad behavior, but as a challenge to demonstrate leadership. The other continuing struggle for Roger was maintaining his rituals when he traveled. As rigorous as he had become about them at home, he had yet to create comparable ones on the road. He rarely built in time to work out. He packed his schedule so tightly that he found it very difficult to take breaks. He was also less careful about his eating, skipping meals during the day and grabbing anything he could find between meetings. At dinner with clients, he still sometimes ate and drank too much. We helped Roger to design one important new ritual and to extend several of his existing ones to his time on the road. The new ritual was aimed at helping him to deal better with high pressure and to communicate more positive energy. We asked Roger to describe how he actually experienced pressure. What he felt first, he told us, was a rising anxiety in his chest, a flood of critical thoughts, and a strong desire to seize control of the situation. When he found himself in those situations, we suggested that Roger begin by taking several deep abdominal breaths. We also asked him to think for a moment about someone whose method of handling tough situations he admired. He chose his boss. Finally, we asked him to visualize behaving the way that he imagined his boss would in crisis, and to use that as a model. As for traveling, Roger realized that it was simply a matter of turning his attention to building rituals comparable to those he had at home. When it came to eating better, he decided that the most important ritual was to begin carrying healthy snacks with him so that he wouldn't be tempted to grab junk food on the run. The best time to work out on the road, he concluded, was before client dinners, which was also a way to decompress after a long day. Roger began scheduling his workout time the same way that he would any other meetings and not letting anything interfere. He also made sure that he was booked only in hotels with fitness centers. Finally, Roger committed to having no more than one glass of wine during dinners with clients and to sip at it very slowly. There were times during the next several months, Roger reported, when a client ordered a particularly great bottle of wine and the seductions were just too great to resist. The same was true when it came to eating at a great restaurant. He also occasionally missed workouts when his schedule got too crowded. For the most part, however, Roger was successful at instituting his new travel rituals, even as he took some ribbing for fishing protein bars out of his briefcase in the middle of long meetings. After 9 months, he reported that he had dropped an additional 7 pounds. No change proved more challenging for Roger, nor ultimately more satisfying, than learning to respond more gracefully under pressure. When he took the time to step back and walk himself through the ritual we had devised with him, Roger found that he was able to significantly reduce his reactivity. There were still occasions when the feeling of pressure to take action overwhelmed his capacity to be more reflective. With that in mind, he eventually created a second ritual for what he called emergencies. In those situations, his tactic was simply to quietly nod his head in acknowledgement, regardless of what he was feeling, and then to say something like, "I understand, and I'd like to take a little time to digest this before I respond." His primary commitment was not to react when he was feeling agitated or impatient. The effect on his direct reports, he told us, was heartening. The gentler and more encouraging he became, the more they responded. In the 6 months after his follow-up visit with us, his team's overall revenues increased by more than 15%, a period during which his company's overall performance was flat. 12 months after we first saw Roger, his career back on a fast track, he made another significant change in his schedule. One day a week, with permission from his boss, he began working at home. He felt convinced that he could use the time to escape the daily demands and to focus more attention on longer-range projects and issues that required more concentrated focus. At the same time, he was eager to be more involved with his children's daily lives. On the day that he worked at home, he took both of his children to school, picked them up in the afternoon, and committed to stopping work by 5 p.m. The deepened connection with his girls was hugely satisfying, and he also found that the day at home was highly productive. Skeptical and resistant as he was when he first came to see us, Roger was able to identify values and to create a vision that proved to be deeply compelling to him. They became both a high-octane fuel and a reliable touchstone when he was faced with difficult choices. His rituals were the means by which he lived out his vision, both at work and at home. "What amazes me most," Roger told us, "is that once my values became clear and I got the hang of building rituals, most of the changes I made just weren't that hard. My life acquired a certain rhythm. I can feel how much my energy has rubbed off on the people in my life. My challenge now is just to feel the pulse and keep the beat."
The power of full engagement, managing energy, not time, is the key to high performance and positive energy, was written and read by Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz. It was abridged for audio by David Smith. The recording engineer was Erica Weintraub, with editing and post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, technical director. The mix engineer was Terry Hogan. The production assistant was Ellen Hurst. The associate producer was Sarah Ginsberg. The power of full engagement, managing energy, not time, is the key to high performance and positive energy, was produced and directed by Susan Perrin. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.